T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
No, I said the 28th. Okay, I wanted to make sure. I have a little script for when I start off the show, Joe, and I didn't know if I had read the wrong date or not. September 28th, 2017. Maybe I transposed the 7 from 2017 into 20. I thought I might have done that, but I didn't. You know why, Joe?
Why is that?
I'm a professional trained by the Defense Information School, just like you were. We're joined live in studio by the executive director of AM Vets, American Veterans. And he is Joe Schinelli, Marine Corps veteran, as I mentioned, not just a fellow DMFOS student. That's where you go to learn how to be a journalist, broadcaster, photographer, etc. in the military. We were in the exact same class for basic journalism course. And then I can't remember. I don't think we were in the same group for broadcasting, though, I don't think.
No, we weren't.
No. I did have a Marine instructor, though, Al Escalas, staff sergeant at the time, who I think when I went back there, oh, God, 10, 11 years later, was now like, I don't know what he was, master gunnery sergeant or something. He was running the student detachment there. No, I think he was an officer. Yeah.
He was a commissioned officer. I spent a year in Iraq with him.
That's what it was. I was going to say master, but he was a commissioned officer.
Great guy.
He was my radio instructor. And do you know what he told me after I did my, I think it was, you had to do these 1 hour radio programs and the instructor listened to it and graded you. And I think you had 5 to do and like 3 of them had to have a passing grade for you to go forward. He had done my first 2. And do you know what staff sergeant at the time, Scalas, told me?
No.
I don't think you're cut out for this radio thing. Said, you're not very good at this. I haven't passed you for the first 2. And here's what happened that actually may have saved me. And I liked him. Nothing personal against the guy. He got sick. He got like the flu. So he was gone. And another instructor came in and did my next 3 and saw the notes that he had left and told me, like, I don't know what he's talking about. Those were 3 of the best hours I've ever heard at DMFOS. Unless you totally changed. I was like, no, I've been doing the same thing. That's what I was trying to tell him. So again, nothing against him. I don't dislike the guy, but I wasn't his cup of tea, apparently. But he was the Marine Corps' cup of tea because, as you said, commissioned officer. I forgot about that. When I went back, I remember he was running the student detachment for the Marine Corps at DMFOS, and he was an officer. For some reason, I was thinking he was like a senior enlisted guy, but no, he'd gone officer.
He retired about a year ago, I believe, as a major. But,
wow.
But I have a way for you to remember the date. Not that your script won't help you there.
Okay.
But,
a Marine is going to tell me about counting?
Today's the 28th, and it won't be surprising when you hear why this Marine has this information. Today's also National Drink a Beer Day.
Ah, okay. Well, you know, I'll look into that and see what the requirements are, if there's some sort of official guidelines from the United States on National Drink a Beer Day. Well, Joe, as always, comes in on Thursdays to talk to us about those items that AM Vets is focused on, the things that they want to talk about that affect not just their membership, but the veteran community in general. And Joe, today we're going to talk about some important things, including, first off, one that's come up repeatedly, and that is individual unemployability. Individual unemployability, for those who don't know, is a program where those who are considered unemployable by the VA, in essence, those who cannot work, are basically given some funding to help them get through life. There's been some issues with this program ongoing over the last few months, and it seems like they're still going on now. So what's the haps with IU?
Sure. Back in the spring, the White House rolled out its first budget proposal. And we've talked about it on this show a few times now. And when it came out, they proposed cutting the IU program for veterans who are senior citizens. The reasoning there was, the thought was, well, these people wouldn't be able to work now anyway because they're of retirement age. One, retirement age as defined in that way is a lot lower than reality. And two, these veterans haven't been able to work for a long period of time, so they don't have the built-in retirement programs that you earn being with a company for a while.
Right.
So we fought like crazy back in the spring because the first thing we heard from our veterans, from our members, were that this is going to be putting us in dire straits. We're feeling very desperate. We had veterans calling us, telling us they felt suicidal about the potential of losing, you know, what's really about half of the compensation that they were living on. So we went up to the Hill. We fought it off very quickly, and Congress got it. And they've rolled out two budget bills, one on the House side, one on the Senate side. Both of them fully fund IU. They ignored the proposed cut. Secretary Shulkin, who, of course, with the administration, to his credit, once he realized how terrible this proposal was, he backed off and said, you know, absolutely, I don't support this. We're a pro-veteran administration, and this is not a pro-veteran proposal. But what happened just earlier this week, now we started receiving calls and a letter from our members who had, in one way or another, inquired with the VA months ago about this proposal. And they wanted to make sure that their benefits were safe, and they expressed how dangerous this would be to them. Mm. This was months ago they wrote this. They wrote to the VA. And then just this week, they received a letter from the VA, which was kind of a confusing letter, which more or less said the proposal is still on the table. It's still a possibility, although the secretary is working with other stakeholders, meaning VSOs, to find other ways to fund the budget. Because this would have saved $3.2 billion. And the administration and Congress really still have not come forward with a way to make up for that $3.2 billion, which would be spent in the CARE program, the community CARE program. So the message that we're sending out now, we just put the letter up, and we're getting messaging out this morning on AMVET social media networks, that veterans do not need to panic. Both the bills in Congress, like I said, fully fund IU. They've heard us loud and clear. They understand this is really important. But that said, until the budgets are actually passed, which probably won't happen until the very end of the calendar year,
right?
If then, AMVETS and I know the other organizations, we're going to be watching this very carefully. And if this does come back up, I'm going to give you a call first thing. I'll be back here to let veterans know we need them to stand up again, the American public to stand up with us again. But right now, I feel pretty confident that those veterans with the IU do not need to panic. And we don't need these veterans, senior citizen veterans in particular, who are seriously disabled. We don't need them panicking.
This letter that the veteran received, do you think it was a mistake? Some people look at it as like that maybe they goofed up. Maybe this is writing on the wall and someone made a mistake in a different direction, not just sent out an incorrect letter, but sent out a letter because they know something that we don't know at this point. I mean, what's behind the letter?
So we're looking for those answers. And a couple of days ago, as soon as we received it, brought the letter to the secretary's office and said, what's going on here? They weren't aware of the letter. We do believe the letter was something that came from VBA, Veterans Benefits Administration. We know it came from there. We believe it was just an ill-advised move. Mm. We believe that the letter was unintentionally written with way too much vagueness.
Right.
And we just don't think that VBA looked at the impact that this would have on these veterans, which goes back to when the proposal was written to begin with. They didn't understand how important this is to veterans.
Yeah, that's something where when we're talking about benefits that have such a strong effect on veterans' lives, we need to be very clear in what we're saying. And if you have this vagary, I don't even know if that's really a word. Maybe Alice Gallis was right. Maybe I'm not cut out for this radio thing, just making up words as we go along. But when it comes to the vagueness of something like that, the when you look at it and you have questions about a letter, that can be a problem. And I've had that happen before where I got something from the VA and said, what does this mean? What I don't understand exactly what this is telling me, and had to read it over a few times. Particularly then when we're talking with some of our older veterans, that can be even more confusing to them who've had things for a certain way for such a long time. Now there's changes perhaps coming. It's something that we'll definitely want to keep an eye on. And of course, AMVETS is keeping an eye on it. And Joe Schinelli is the National Executive Director of AMVETS. One other big thing in the VA and medical world specifically is choice funding. We talked about it when this show first started back in June. For the first couple of months, we talked about the choice funding. There was, of course, the proposal that the VSOs, including AMVETS, VFW, American Legion, banded together and said, whoa, we don't really think this is the best way to do this. That was shot down. Another one went up. It got passed through very quickly, a very rapid and surprising to some people cascade of events. And from what I'm hearing from you now, it sounds like there's already some problems with that emergency funding that was passed for choice. So I got to ask you, are we going to need more emergency funding for choice to cover us through the time of the year that they said it was going to cover through?
I think we are. Secretary Shulkin told me yesterday that he feels he's not expressing confidence, but he did say that the current pace could last at least through the end of this calendar year, which is still a little shorter than we'd all hoped. We were hoping that this could go through March. So Congress was able to pass through, and President Trump was able to sign a bill that gave $2.1 billion more of emergency funding into the choice funds. This is for veterans who need health care, qualify for health care through the VA, but the VA is unable to provide it in their facilities for one reason or the other. Might be because the veteran lives too far away from a facility, or might be because that facility just doesn't have the capabilities, or it's too busy. So it's an important program, and about a third of all appointments that the VA provides are taken care of in the community. We think that ratio is pretty good. We don't want to see it grow, but it's expensive.
Yeah.
It's much more expensive to send a veteran out in town than it is to take care of him or her in the VA. And so the big problem here is that the VA does not have a way to predict the costs.
Right.
And so when they went
in, have no control over. I mean, when it comes to VA care, they have some semblance of control. They know how much they're paying the doctors. They know how much they're paying for supplies. When you go out in town, it can vary, not just state to state, it can vary town to town. Look at my home state of Connecticut. Fairfield County is one of the wealthiest counties in the country. You go to some other parts of the state, they're nowhere near as wealthy. So the care is going to be different if someone's living in Stamford, Norwalk, Greenwich, as opposed to someone who's living in New London or someplace like that. I mean, the variations are a part of the problem, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. And illnesses that our veterans are facing seem to be more and more complicated. And a lot of times the VA facilities they have the most people around them are just too busy. Mm. And for a long time now, and the VSO community has talked about this for decades, but at least the last 25 years, they have not put nearly enough money into the infrastructure of the VA. So some of these facilities, although the money's starting to come in, they're just not ready for the influx of veterans. We have so many more veterans now, and as the Vietnam veteran gets older and older, more of them need to be coming into VA facilities as well.
Yeah.
And, we're doing a lot of outreach, letting veterans know how great the VA is once you actually get into the system. And so that's, again, that's increasing their caseload. But the only way that the VA right now has to predict the cost is based on historical data. But as I said, the historical data is really not valid anymore. Mm. And so this is a problem we've had now for about 2 years straight where they continually under forecast. There's some fixes, and hopefully we're looking for something from the administration here in the next few days, actually. It may be the major road plan forward on the care program. Our biggest concern, and our biggest concern with this $2.1 billion that was passed back in the early summer, was just the predictability. That's something we have to fix. Can't keep kicking the can down the road. Emergency funding is not sustainable.
I mean, if look at it, take it to try to make a personal analogy. If I go to Joe Schinelli and I say, hey, I need $20. It's going to get me through the rest of this week. I'll be able to feed my family with $20. Can you help me out? You figure out a way to get that $20. You give me the $20. And that's on Monday. And then on Wednesday, I come to you and go, hey, so $20 wasn't quite enough. It turns out that I needed more things than I thought I did. I had to buy some special stuff. How about another $20? I mean, can we continue on in that manner? Of course not. We need to find a way to figure out what it's going to cost on the regular, essentially. But with this being a new program, do you think that's where the problems come from? Or do you think it's the fact that more people become aware of it and use it? I mean, where does the issue arise? Where does it generate from at the ground level?
It's increased use. It's more people becoming aware of it. It's more people not wanting to get their care in the VA because of this concerted smear campaign that's been going on against the VA's reputation for several years, funded in large part by pro-privatization companies and organizations. And they've really trained local media to create national scandals. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying things are perfect at the VA or they ever have been.
No.
But there's definitely this part of the media that has been out there for years telling veterans that the VA is trying to kill you. And so these veterans say, hey, I don't want to be seen in the VA. So they do whatever they can. They get into the CHOICE program. The important part is that they get their health care. But like I said, we really need to keep it around a third. But then healthcare costs fluctuate. The VA does not have set prices that they're willing to pay providers.
Mm-hmm.
You have Blue Cross Blue Shield, for instance, as your insurance. Blue Cross Blue Shield, all their doctors, all their providers in their network have to agree to how much a CAT scan is going to cost, or how much an appendix is going to cost. You know, and the VA doesn't have that right now.
Right.
That's something this new care program is going to create, but it's going to take a while. In meantime, again, we cannot just rely on the emergency funding. And when you talk about $20, you sound like my teenage kids here. And it wouldn't work 20. For me. It shouldn't work for our government.
My child is only 4, so he has no understanding of the value of anything. He's like, oh, I want that. I'm like, dude, that costs $500. You're not getting that. Why not? Well, it's $500. Yeah, but that's just money. Well, okay. He makes some valid points. When you're 4 years old, everything is just something. It's very simple. But looking at everything at the VA, and of course, it's interesting that you mentioned the smear campaign, which I hadn't really thought of it that way, but I suppose it certainly amounts to that, whether it's intentional or not. Sometimes it can be in the ways that you've described, it would seem that it would be. Other times it's just the news, the way news works. Before coming here, I worked in one of the biggest and busiest newsrooms in New York City, and we looked for the stories that don't happen every day. We looked for the outliers because that's the stuff that's going to catch people's interest. If you're getting, someone was arrested for public intoxication outside of a bar, that's not a news story. Someone was Someone was arrested for public intoxication while hanging off at the top of a roof or something like that. That's where your news story is. So people are going to look for those outliers at the VA. And based on most people I've talked to, they are outliers. Even the people who talk about the VA with a very negative tone, it's almost always, in my personal experience of interacting with my fellow vets, it's almost always because of something they heard happened to someone else or something they knew happened to someone else. Almost this third person information that comes along. It's very rarely, hey, I showed up and this was what happened to me and this was the problem. There are obviously those cases out there, but I think they're pretty small in number, I would assume anyway, because I don't see a million veterans coming up and wanting to come on this show and talk about how horrible the VA's been to them. Most of them have nothing but good things to say about the VA care.
Agreed. And the smear campaign not only has turned veterans off from wanting to go to the VA, but it's also turned quality medical providers from wanting to work at the VA. You're already, as a provider, probably looking at making less working in the VA. It's not like working for a nonprofit. You do it because, not for the money, but because you know you're making a difference. But when the media continually tells these veterans you're the enemy and that you don't care about these veterans, they don't want to work there. And right now, the VA has a huge, we're talking 40,000 vacancies across the United States. And that really cuts into capacity.
It absolutely can. And then you wonder how many people won't apply because of what they've heard about the VA. And of course, how much of what they've heard is the truth versus, maybe an exaggeration of something or a focus on one thing and ignoring all of the other good things that go on. Again, the only issue I ever had with the VA was a bureaucratic issue where essentially things get lost in the shuffle. They lost my dental records, my medical records, things like that. It wasn't the doctors and nurses and other people that I interacted with there as far as the care. It was that bureaucratic process, also getting an appointment. But I can tell you one thing, right before we went on vacation, and of course this happened like 2 days before my wife and I are planning to head down to the island of Vieques, a former Navy installation there off the coast of Puerto Rico, where, oh boy, there's some rough times happening down in Puerto Rico right now. But I broke my toe while working at a dive shop. I dropped an oxygen tank on my toe and had to go to the VA. And it was fantastic. Went right into the emergency room. They took care of me. They gave me the walking boot, which I then took off almost as soon as I left because I was going on vacation. I wasn't wearing a walking boot. But yeah, it's very interesting, the different perspectives on the VA and finding out how much of that is based in reality, how much of it is based in hearsay. A lot of it is a little bit interesting and difficult to parse at times. Also interesting and difficult to parse, the hullabaloo that continues to surround the national anthem and protests and the flag and everything else at NFL games. What does the AmVets organization as a whole, we're speaking with National Executive Director of AmVets, Joe Schinelli, what's the AmVets official stance on this and what's Joe Schinelli's perspective on it?
Sure. Well, as an organization, we've elected to kind of take this on in a more private way. First of all, we have an Americanism program, and it's really a focus for us on teaching our youth, America's youth, the importance of patriotism and respect for the flag and respect for veterans, of course. So we have privately, and we started this last year Kaepernick started kneeling down. We sent a letter to the NFL, to the NFL's players union, and at that point to the San Francisco 49ers, letting them know that we don't believe that's the time and place for a protest. We're not taking a position outside of our realm, so we're not taking a position on what this protest is actually about. Things like that. We do believe it's important to properly honor our nation. We believe that the national anthem is a time for unity, and it's a time where, in a very divided country, it should be a place where we're coming together. That said, probably the unique view that we have here is we'd really like to keep veterans and the military out of this conversation.
Yeah.
It's not that we don't want to fight for our flag, although we certainly want to also protect the First Amendment rights, with the Constitution, the really important things that we fought for. But having veterans in this conversation puts us into the political divide. And right now, we're able to talk about things like the Forever GI Bill, and we're able to talk about the VA and other veterans' benefits. They're not getting cut. In day and age where everything in the federal government's facing cuts year after year, everything except for the VA, everything except for veterans. And the reason for that is because we don't have enemies. Yeah. Everybody supports veterans. I know a lot of people tell me, oh, just action, or it's words, they don't actually, actions. I'll tell you, when the IU thing came up, mm-hmm. and we talked about this a little earlier, we reached out to the American public, and they screamed at Congress, and Congress listened. And it's because we're above the political fray. We don't take sides. We're not on one side. We're not on the conservative side or the liberal side or any other side. And I think there's factions in this whole fight that want us to be on one of the sides for their firepower. And if we start taking sides on non-veterans issues like this, we're going to be hurting. And it'll have long-term ramifications, and it'll put us in a political place that we don't want to be. And Joe Schinelli, as a citizen, I stand. As I've said before, I attend several NFL games a year. I was just there this past weekend. I was in Buffalo with my sons, and we all stood for the national anthem, of course. And I say, of course, because we understand, and it's a military color guard out there that has holding that flag. But I don't think I'm not going to go out there and use my veteran status as a political bully pulpit to say, tell someone else not to do something.
Right. And that's when we've had the conversation. You can find a podcast on Vet Story at connectingvets.com. Podcast maestro Phil Briggs put it together and organized it. He spoke to us, veterans here. He actually spoke to a cousin of mine who's a former U.S. Army Ranger. He spoke to Joe Clare from WPGC here in CBS Radio. He spoke to a variety of veterans and other folks about their opinions on it. And the one common denominator was that among the veterans in particular, we respect people's rights to do what they feel is right, as long as it's within the bounds of the law and not violent. And we also reserve our right to disagree with them. But again, using veterans on one side or the other, you know, when you're trying to insert yourself into that, I don't know if that's always a positive thing. I don't know if it's always a negative thing. I know that it's something that it'll continue, but I'm glad to see that the VSOs are, I think, putting the right message out there, including AMVETS. We've been speaking with National Executive Director of AMVETS, Joe Schinelli, as we do every Thursday here on The Morning Briefing. Joe, if people want to find out more about AMVETS, where do they go?
Please check us out at AMVETS.org. We're also on Facebook, and that letter about IU is up there right now at AMVETS National Headquarters.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.